What does Mike Church and the Princess Bride Cecilia know that war, kill, Americans don't?
Ha ha, you fool! You fell victim to one of the classic blunders. The most famous is never get involved in a land war in Asia.
The Mike Church Show, a daily beacon of chivalry and peace for brides and princesses. Heard exclusively crusading here on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
It's the Mike Church Show here, asking you to take 8 weeks of daily doses of the Founding Fathers' red pill, sprinkle with a few drops of holy water. Boy, howdy, we got some holy water in on it today, don't we? Claim your Philosophia Perennis thinking skills, become members of the self-governing Christian people of these United States. Not a job, it's a way of life. Our website at VeritasRadioNetwork.com. Folks, before I put Mr. McInerney on here, I just want to say that we are all just on pins and needles and eggshells around here, just excited about tomorrow. And I just wanted to finish the thought that I began, and in my ill-tempered manner that I do so often, I didn't finish. And that is to say that in the short order since November the 11th, 2015, and here we are almost 6 months to the day, because today's May the 17th, so tomorrow will be May the 18th, 6 months and 3 days afterwards, we're actually going to pull off and execute in public a very professional broadcast live from a location that does not host broadcasts. Christopher, I think we lost our guest. And when we do these things, we figured out how to do this. That means after tomorrow, provided all goes, God, Lord willing, through the grace of God, everything goes the way it's supposed to go tomorrow, and everybody has a great time, we've paved the way then for it to happen in other places again. And that is not a small achievement or a small feat. And so before we go, that even happens tomorrow, let me just acknowledge that Greg Carpenter, host of Reverse Deception, and Jeremy Nalewick, who's a dear friend and has been of the show for a long time, have been instrumental. I mean, they're the ones that did all the most of the legwork and planning in this. Cynthia Frawley has been booking all the guests. She is our guest booker. That, folks, it takes a lot of energy and a lot of effort to put one of these things together. And the fact that we've done it, guys and gals, I know we're not supposed to be proud in the sense that pride is the worst and the greatest of all sins, but be very satisfied that many of you have worked towards something that the date that we're going to be able to remember and say, hey, you remember? Man, back in the day when we did that first live broadcast, you remember them days? Just remember, a lot of effort went into this. Trust me, me and young Christopher were here yesterday. If you'd have seen that table and the miles upon miles of unconnected cables trying to make this, trying to patch together with all the equipment that we have here, trying to patch the broadcast team and the broadcast equipment together. There's a photograph of it on the Facebook feed. Anyways, thanks to all of you. I think it opens the way for much more great things to happen. We are only by the grace of God is that possible. So thank you. Let's go to our Dude Maker hotline and say hello to, for the first time, DQ McInerney, PhD, who I think after we talk to Mr. McInerney, you'll be asking me to have him back. His writings on matters to Americans and matters to Catholics and Christians, using and employing philosophy. You could call it Aristotelian. You could call it Thomistic. You could call it Philosophia Perennis, my preference. help us to focus and to see clearly many of the problems that we see around us, which require clear thinking to get to any sort of solution. So, Dr. McInerney, I thank you for your time. It's a pleasure to have you, my friend. How are you?
I'm just fine. Thank you. I'm pleased to be here speaking with you.
Absolutely. So I found an archive for your writings at, of all places, the Priestly Fraternity of St. Peter.
And yes, indeed. I know that outfit very well, actually.
It's a great place to find writings and a great place just in and of itself. And the first one that I read this morning that I want to talk to you about, because I think that this is what we are currently dealing with this nuttiness, is just, gosh, I don't even know what to call. I've lost the proper superlatives, I think, for this insistence that all people must accommodate those that are confused about their gender. And you wrote about this, about the common good, state identity, and the cultivation of virtue. And I take this as a struggle against what my friend David Simpson, who's a big fan of yours, a big reader of yours for years. David's the one that told me that you should get DQ. You'll love that conversation, Mike. So, but to talk about, if you would, to the audience, about the pursuit of common good over the pursuit of individual good.
Well, many sound philosophers have called their attention to what it surely should mean, the common good. I'm thinking especially of a professor, Charles de Koenig, who for many years taught up at Laval University, at a time when Laval was kind of the Thomistic center of North America. But I think many people today, especially politicians, they think of the common good in too narrow a way. It's almost exclusively in economic terms, as if the common good were no more than just the sum total of individual goods, which is precisely what it is not. It's a good that transcends all individual goods, and yet, at one at the same time, it includes individual goods in the most important way. That is to say, those goods that are. Most important indeed for all of us in terms of, you know, our eternal destiny. So the commonness, and this is lost, of course, as you know, on the modern mind, the foundational commonness really should be spiritual rather than material. Not that it excludes the material. I mean, we are body and soul, and we have to put bread on the table and live our daily lives working through them. But we have to keep our eye on the one thing necessary. And I'm afraid that's pretty much lost on so many people today, especially the people who are the movers and shakers in the political realm and media and things like that. So perhaps one word that might help to really focus on what is indeed the meaning of the common good, rightly understood, is it's transcendent. That is to say, it transcends individual goods. But here again, if I may repeat this point, it includes the individual good in the most serious sense. So it should be truly comprehensive. And needless to say, apropos, you know, what you brought up right at the outset there, it would just emphatically exclude the kind of craziness, you know, that we see abounding today on all sides. This, what is it, transgender business or whatever, people who apparently don't know what they are, you know. That's sad enough. I mean, any individual who's that profoundly confused, I think they deserve our genuine pity and prayers. But what is so lamentable is you get this attitude that somehow we're not supposed to, you know, feel genuine sorrow for some people, but somehow we're supposed to approve their confusion. And now, my goodness, we find, you know, the federal government backing this give you up. It's it's not a little disconcerting, to say the least.
Boy, is it disconcerting. I was thinking as you were talking about this, and I was thinking that you're trying to put this in perspective of something that the state and that government no longer does, but that it used to be, Dr. McKierney, and that is that the church would determine that there was a that someone was operating and upon and was promoting what you and I as philosophers would call error.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That the error is dangerous to the soul because it's going to lead it astray and it's going to put it in a state of apostasy or in a state of sin. And so if the church determined that, look, this is against the common good, this must be stopped, then the government would act upon that, and it was the government that would carry out the punishment against the heretic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ideally. As you nicely stated, that's the ideal situation. But boy, we've drifted a long way away from that, haven't we? I mean, alas, it seems in recent decades we haven't found, at least on a consistent basis, clear pronouncements from the church herself, you know, as to what constitutes error. When and that what makes, of course, that so problematic is that there's error all around us that has to be, you know, emphatically called attention to. And then it's up to the government to, you know, take whatever specific action, legal or whatever, that has to be taken to correct the error. But that whole, unfortunately, that whole ideal system, if I could put it that way, an ideal system, has pretty much collapsed today. I guess, but we must each of us as individuals do what we can to remedy the situation, to put the, you know, get our voice in there. It's precisely what you're doing, Mr. Church, with your program there.
Well, doctor, I'm trying. I am assisted by, and I am blessed that I had a friend who took me under his wing and started counseling me on my errors, and ultimately taunted me one day. You know, you might make a pretty good philosophy student, but you know, you'd have to humiliate yourself and listen to this Brother Francis Maloof guy.
Oh yes, there's a good man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know him personally?
No, Brother Francis. No, but. I'm all the way to almost to the end of the 8-part series. I'm in, I've made it all the way to part 7. I'm in epistemology now.
Oh, very good. Yeah, he there was the first-rate philosopher and a holy man.
Boy, was he. But let me ask you about something that I hear Brother talking about, and my dear friend David Simpson, who has a show about finances from a Catholic Christian perspective here on this show, he talks about this often, and I think there's a lot of confusion about this. Maybe you can help us sort this out. This is, by the way, folks, this is Professor D.Q. McInerney here, Ph.D. and philosopher on the Dude Maker Hotline with us. I have another question, a follow-up on that, but I want to get to, if I don't do this, I'm going to lose my place. So
okay. Can
you describe, just maybe explain, there is a difference between a right and a responsibility, and between natural rights and civil rights. This is a huge source of confusion today, don't you think?
Oh, indeed it is, yeah. Well, the distinction you cited right there, that's, I think, where we should begin. There are certain natural rights, and they're locked in or carved in stone, if you will. They're inalienable, as the word rightly has it. They can, the basic one, of course, which is much violated today, is the right to life. They're just, how to put it, they're God-given. They cannot be erased. But then beyond those, there are civil rights. To cite a very low-level one, I mean, the right to operate an automobile in a state. You know, that's a right that's given by the state, and it can be taken away from the state if you
turn
out to be a reckless driver. But here, what compounds the confusion today, what we have witnessed in this country and perhaps beyond, no doubt, is a profusion of pseudo rights, phony rights. People are concocting rights out of whole cloth that are absolutely non-existent. Well, the right to kill children, for example, babies, and there's no such right. There never could be, and there never will be such a right. The right to for a man to marry a man or a woman to marry a woman. I mean, this is just absolute irrationality. So that is, and you know, they're manufactured day by day, these new rights, but they're not. The word is used, the word right is used, but they are not rights. And that, I think that adds immeasurably to the confusion that we have to deal with today.
Yeah, and sorting out the, I concur, and sorting out the difference between the civil and the natural, and then appealing to the natural order to inform the civil order. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can say that the founding fathers, as we call them, didn't get everything right, because they most certainly did not. And I believe their fatal, lethal error is they got the order incorrect. You have to have the order of God and the eternal law above the secular law. Definitely. And you conform the secular law to that, then you're not going to be where we are today. But even Jefferson, Jefferson was the least religious of all these guys, I think. But he did, through his schooling, because they all were pretty much educated the same then, he did understand the order. I mean, he understood, he even expressed it in the Declaration of Independence. You know, he expressed that there is the law of nature and there's law of nature's God. So it's not as though we don't know Dr. McKiernan, that we don't know that there is an order. It's just that we've gotten it wrong. It's backwards, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that was good commentary on the Founding Fathers. Yeah, they surely didn't get it all right. But I think there was, even in someone like Jefferson, there was enough, residual Christian consciousness
right
in them. So he had expressed it eloquently, I think, in the Declaration, that there's that foundational right. But you're precisely right. We've got it just topsy-turvy today. But here's another problem, and I'm sure you're aware of it. And this is something that we've been battling with, I think, maybe a good part of a century, and that we've lost a sense of the natural law, that there is this universal moral law, if you will, God-given, which should be the foundation for civil law, and because in so many of our a good many of our legislators today they just don't have a sense, any lively sense at all, of the natural law, so they crank out all this sometimes really heinous legislation which. Because it has no connection, no foundation whatsoever. As I say, I think we've been, and this is common knowledge, I don't mean to make it sound like it's a big insight on my part, but for almost a century, we have had legislation, not only in this country, but around the world, that is without foundation. That is to say, the proper foundation in natural law. And consequently, you get, well, as you know, St. Thomas argued that his civil law is not founded upon the natural. It simply is not law. So obviously, it's a fact that there are many things on the books in our country today. We can say, literally, they're legal. But in the deeper, more meaningful sense, again, according to St. Thomas, for example, the abortion law, they're not laws, because any civil law that does not reflect the natural law, which he very nicely described, what is the natural law? He said it's simply the eternal law of God, as grasped, as understood by the human intellect.
Right.
Well, if our our civil laws are not based on that. He says simply they're not laws, and they don't have to be honored as such. But that is you're quite right. That's the basic problem. So we have all these pseudo laws, if you will, kind of floating in midair, and that they have no real foundation under them.
844-527-8723 is our telephone number. Our special guest today is Dr. D.Q. McInerney. Now, my big question for you is, anytime I see someone who has the name Q, we're very limited. And, you know, there's lots of board games and parlor games that you can play. You can play Scrabble. You can play other games. And Q is always one of the letters that gets people. May I ask, what is the Q part of your
name?
Yeah,
well, it's Quentin, and that's the closest my father could come. I'm the fifth son. I'm one of 10 kids, and Quintus for fifth. So he didn't want to call me Quintus. So Quentin was Saint Quentin. He's a martyr. You know, I've often wondered over the years. My two baptismal saints, Saint Denis and Saint Quentin. They're both martyrs, and they both had their heads chopped off. That's caused me.
That's a great lineage, there, I tell you.
Considerable worry over here if I'm to follow in their footsteps. Anyway, but well, that's it. Yeah, it's Quentin.
Well, mine, of course. Well, my birth name, Michael. Obviously for Saint Michael. So no head chopped off there.
No, he would do the job.
He would do the job. But my confirmation name, it's always just a source of great the divinely inspired, just to show you that there's a hand that the hand of God is at work, whether we admit it or not, it always is. Someone told me, the priest that did my confirmation, because I'm a convert back in the 90s, told me, it was early in my radio career when you had to choose patron saint. He told me, he said, "Mike, I didn't even have to think about this for you, you radical wacko." Augustine, you're Augustine.
Oh,
you're Augustine. You. So I took Augustine.
Oh, that's a beautiful name.
And
yes.
Do you know, Dr.
Great saint.
Yeah, McInerney, do you know that Saint Augustine has come up, and Augustine has come up over and over and over. I feel like I converted once to the Novus Ordo back in the 90s, and I'm not sure that was a full conversion, because the conversion with the Latin Mass and now the philosophy and all the other, and then actually learning about the saints and trying to read and write to learn to speak Latin and, you know, get into the classics and all that. I think I'm in my second conversion now.
Well, that I could... I'm with you on that. Of course, I was what they, you know, call a cradle Catholic, and I went through the trauma, really, and it was all that when the Novus Ordo, appeared on the scene, and it was really traumatic for me and for many others. But thank God, things are changing, and I've been in just an island of liturgical and spiritual sanity here. This I just completed. Yesterday was our last class day of the semester. So I just completed my 21st year with the fraternity.
Wow, that's fantastic! Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. It was a blessing. It is a blessing. Believe me, I've taught at various other places throughout the country. This is a haven of sanity and devotion. It's just
it's a holy place, it sounds like.
It is. And I've never used the phrase. We have a young priest, former student of mine, of course, and you pass him in the hall of the seminary, and you'd say, "Well, Dominic, how are you?" And he would answer, "Better than I deserve." And I've never used it, but I think I could legitimately use it. You know, when people ask, "How are things going with this situation?" I like to say, "Better than I deserve." it's an ideal. It's a singular blessing.
So you were the you taught Mike Cunningham?
Oh, yes. Yes.
I know his brother, Steve. His brother, Steve, hosts a show here on Sundays. We call it Sermon Sunday.
Oh,
Steve,
for goodness sake.
Yeah, Steve gathers up Father, fraternal, the FSSP priests and their sermons, and Father Ripperger. And, there's a lot of them that don't want their – I almost said one of their names. There's some of them that don't like their names used, so I didn't say their names. But we play that every Sunday. Dr. McInerney, before you dispose of me –
not at all.
Because you must be tired of me.
Not at all.
Before we part company, if you would, you know, you've been doing this for years. You've seen young men come into seminary there for the Fraternal Society of St. Peter. Some of the, I'm just going to assume that the God's grace has just shown those young men, or has just told them, look, I have something for you to do, and you need to go here and learn how to do it. And so they went. They came in, and they're what we would call in Philosophia Perennis, they are men of goodwill.
Indeed,
and as long as you have goodwill, my friends, you're new. All of us, I have to have goodwill, or I am not open to the grace of God. You have to, as long as we have goodwill, good things can happen to us. People that have turned off from the Word, from the Gospel, from Holy Mother Church. And it just reject the 2,000-year tradition just out of hand, out of pocket. It's all just a bunch of mystical nonsense. And, you know, everything has been better off since the revolution in the 16th century here. To me, they're lacking a bit of goodwill. And I one of the things that I think that comes out of goodwill is that if you have goodwill, then you also have a path to gain humility. And it is in humiliation, I think, that the men of our generation. Oh, I'm 54 years old, so I guess I still got a little fight in me. I'm not over the hill just yet. I'm close.
No, you're nowhere near it, from my perspective.
But the men of my generation, doctor, have got to humiliate themselves if they haven't already done it, and have got to at least go through the hard scrabble, difficult parts of some kind of scholastic philosophy, and for the purpose of unlearning the error and learning to spot it, so that you can then know with certainty, and you can have certitude on what the truth is. Now you've had young men that have come your way. 21 years you've seen them come in, and I would suspect that many of them were like, I don't want this philosophy. That's going to be complicated. It's too hard. I'm not Aristotle. Why do I have to do this? What kind of advice would you give to someone that has just never dabbled in it whatsoever, and maybe suggest just a small course of action to get them going in the right direction?
Yeah, that's a very pointed emphasis you make. Goodwill. That is foundational, isn't it?
That opens
up all the right doors. But these, they have it, these men. And what amazes me is the variety of men we get. Young men, middle. We have a priest. He's now stationed in Australia. He came to us at age 55 years old. He was a sophisticated San Francisco lawyer. I'll tell you, he fit in. I mean, he had the kind of goodwill, docility, but he went through all. We have a standard classical, if you will, traditional course. Everyone goes through 2 years of philosophy, then 4 years of theology. He went through those. Of course, it did splendidly. A very smart man, but he just rolled up his sleeves, as they all do, and they take to it with great avidity, great fervor. Almost, it's a delight. I tell you, I don't want to get carried away here, but it's a delight to teach in this place. I mean, given this men, given their attitude, it's. I've never run into the likes of it anywhere else. It's a blessing.
Would you recommend a particular work for your young students, or what do you start the newbies off with?
Well, I hope this doesn't sound too egotistical, but I've written a whole series of textbooks, and I use my own textbooks.
Here, read this book. Hey, who's the author of this? Well, I am, so that's why you ordered. Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, St. Thomas, and the reason, listen, I did, the reason I did this, and this is one of the sadder aspects of post-Vatican II Catholicism, there used to be just a plethora of first-rate books in scholastic Thomistic perennial philosophy. I like that term too. That's because the philosophy we teach, following the mind of the great Pope Leo XIII, it should be perennial. It should take everyone in it. St. Augustine, Boethius, St. Anselm, you know, not just, and surely St. Thomas up there in the front row, our whole, and this is in the constitutions of the fraternity, St. Thomas, he is our guiding light for philosophy and theology. So the books I wrote, I was out of necessity because there simply are not standard textbooks available today.
Okay.
Attempted to do is simply reflect, the thought of the perennial philosophy in them. But then when they get into theology, pretty much it's the Summa of St. Thomas, the Summa Theologiae, which is their principal text in almost every course.
Well, you know, and it shows, too, because they can all quote it, and they can all quote it off the top of their head. No, I've listened to enough of them speak, and they all know it.
Yes.
Yep. And they all refer to it. Well, you should refer to this to deny that St. Thomas, that there was not some uber bestowing of intellect upon that man is just to deny reality.
Oh, it is. I'll tell you, I'm never going to get used to that man. He continues to astound me. and when you think what he accomplished within the sparse 49 years, with none of our aids, electronic or otherwise.
No, none of it.
I mean, he is just on a natural level, apart from his obvious and preeminent sanctity. He was a towering intellect. Just absolutely amazing. Anyway.
He was. That's all the time we have. But boy, what a great conversation. I'm so glad that you're able to make some time for us now that your class schedule permits it. I will go and find the book because I saw the listings of your books because people are going to ask me, Mike, you didn't get the name of the book.
Well, look, Mr. Church. Right now, I'm looking across the table and a pile of proof sheets for the third edition of a book of mine called Philosophical Psychology. And if things go well, it should be out in a month. And I'll make a point of sending you a copy of it. So I'd be happy to do that.
Well, I appreciate that, Doctor. Thank you very much. I got to go catch a plane. I'm off to Philadelphia, but boy, I sure did enjoy this.
Same here. I really did.
Hey, and I'm not gonna. I won't mention his name, but I bet you instructed the FSSP priest from Montana, who uses the term "boy howdy," and boy has he infected me with that term. Boy howdy, this boy. I can hear him quoting you in his homilies. You can tell that he has taken philosophy of perennis because he talks about nature, the nature of things. He talks about the order, all the stuff Brother Francis talks about, which apparently you do as well. Of course, Brother Francis was a devout student of St. Thomas.
Yes, indeed.
I will look forward to that book and to having you back. And I'd love to go up there maybe this spring if it would work out. And do the retreat, the FSSP retreat. I know
Father Buckley, excellent.
Yes!
We just had lunch yesterday. He's first rate.
Well, maybe I can make that retreat. I'll have to ask Father if he can extend me an invite. I'd love to go. Hey, everybody, Dr. DQ McInerney spent a little time with us here on the Crusade Channel. God bless you, my friend, and thank you so much. Appreciate it.
It was my pleasure, Mr. Church.
We'll talk soon.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. So, folks, gentlemen, you have your marching order. The third edition of the Philosophical Psychology. Actually, the best place to start is to just do what we've been telling you for 2 years now. It's been almost, a year now, over a year. That is, go to Catholicism.org, make contact with Brother Andre Marie. He's hiding in plain sight all over the internet. If you can't find him, send me an email. Well, I'll give you his email address, bam, B-A-M, at Catholicism.org. Can't be any easier than that. Tell Brother Andre you want the introductory lectures to Philosophia Perennis. And even if you don't make it past the introductions, those 8 lectures will change the way you think. Then buy a copy of Humility of Heart, and you're off to the races. All right, folks, we'll be right back. 844-527-8723. Make sure you go sign up to be a Founders Pass member today. I also implore you, please, go get a ticket. They're free. To our event tomorrow in Philadelphia at Twin Smoke Shop. It's the Mike Church Show live. The inner studio lounge seating is sold out, but general admission tickets are there. We're going for a luncheon afterwards. You can still get a luncheon ticket. And, of course, the luncheon is Dutch. Everybody's is paying their own. But we're going down the street to Grumpy's to have Philly cheesesteak sandwiches and beers afterwards. Very much looking forward to meeting so many of you that I've known for so long here on the show, even from the old station in the old country. So that's tomorrow. Let's make a big showing of it. If you live within, there's like 80 million people that live within 3 hours of Philadelphia. If you haven't made plans, make plans. RSVP today. Bring the wife, bring the children. Twin Smoke Shop, downtown Philadelphia. We'll be right back here. It's the Mike Church Show here on the Veritas Radio, on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. Radio the way it should be.